Hello everyone, and this is our Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 10. We're on page 21 of Esoteric Astrology, and we have just been considering the idea of the centers being involved in the reversal of the wheel. Now, I have a quotation which I've shown you before, but every time we have the mentioning of the wheel going in a clockwise manner from Aries through Pisces to Aquarius versus the wheel going in a counterclockwise manner, as normally considered, from Aries to Taurus to Gemini, we have this question of what that actually means for the human being. And this is the quotation, which I think is of great value, and which we can read. I have several times used the phrase pass through the centers and forms. This concept necessitates the idea of distributing centers to which incoming energies may go, and from which they may pass out again as radiation. Some idea of this might be grasped if I gave you, the new proposition, new to you though old to esotericists, of the centers in the human etheric body. The four centers above the diaphragm, the heart, throat, ajna, and head centers, are basically and primarily receiving centers. Now, this at first, of course. The centers below the diaphragm, the base of the spine, sacral, solar plexus, and spleen centers, are galvanized into activity by the four higher receiving centers. This, when accomplished, demonstrates as personality and physical magnetism and influence until the time comes when there is a reversal in the way of passing as a soul around the zodiac. This is symbolized as the revolution of the sun around the zodiac from Aries to Pisces, instead of the reverse movement from Aries to Taurus. This is repeated in the human frame, and the four lower centers eventually return that which has come to them. They thus reverse the process normally followed by the undeveloped human being, and the centers above the diaphragm become radioactive, dynamic, and magnetic. This is an intricate occult study and is concerned with the response of the etheric body to the incoming energies. It relates, finally, the lowest center at the base of the spine to the highest center, the head center. This is a correspondence to the relation of the earth to the sun. Think this out. Well, we'll be getting, actually, to this quote, since it is from Esoteric Astrology, page 25. But we do see the practical effects of the reversal of the wheel, when, symbolically, the sun is moving from Aries through Pisces to Aquarius, the higher centers receive the incoming energy, but it is they pass it through to the lower centers, which are stimulated, and then you have the personal and physical magnetism. However, when the refinement of the human energy system becomes such that the higher centers begin to develop, they act as magnetic centers, drawing the energy of the lower chakras upward, and man reverses the kind of magnetism that he expresses. And now it is the centers above the diaphragm which become magnetic, radioactive, and stimulated. There are probably energy flows within the human energy system which demonstrate this kind of reversal. So at first, the lower chakras are the object of attention. I believe there's another quote someplace in the teaching. I'll try to find it, where it talks about passing through. That they are not really stimulated. See, the higher centers certainly are not stimulated in any significant sense at the beginning of the evolutionary process, and while man is considered to be an average and personality-centered human being, the lower centers are indeed stimulated. Later, and only later, once the lower centers return what was given to them initially to the higher centers, then there is stimulation. And I would say that the incoming energies at that time begin to stimulate the higher centers in such a way that they draw the energy upward from the lower centers. Okay. So, let's see. We are at this point. This is page 21. This reversal of the way a man travels through the signs of the zodiac will necessitate a readjustment of the method employed by astrologers when they are casting a horoscope of senior aspirants, of disciples, and of initiates. I think before one becomes a senior aspirant, he cannot really utilize the energies of the sacred rulers, the esoteric rulers. There is a sense in which people simply respond differently to the potentials of any zodiacal sign or planetary deity according to the type of development that they have undergone. One can get, as it were, the best and the worst out of the sign. There are lower potentials in any sign and higher potentials, and just like any deity, a planetary lord or a zodiacal lord has a whole range of developmental issues. There are aspects of his nature which are far more highly developed and aspects which are less developed. We could say that the human beings who have not developed will respond more to the less developed aspects of the planetary lord or the zodiacal lord, and that the highly developed human beings will respond to the more highly developed aspects of the planetary lord or zodiacal lord. Now, that's one way of looking at it. The other way is simply that the planetary lord or zodiacal lord has a certain type of radiation which stimulates different forms in different ways, and that low forms adapt that energy in a low way, and high forms adapt that energy in a higher way. According, therefore, to an individual's point in evolution, upon the path, or in other words, the individual's place upon the wheel of life, that's an interesting idea, we'll look at it, the practicing astrologer will arrange the interpretation of the horoscope. This place upon the wheel of life, well, the greatest wheel of life extends from the monad down through the five worlds and returning, ascending through the five worlds and back to the monad. We're not so interested in the position upon that great wheel of life until a man is individualized and is already on the upward arc. The life is on the upward arc. But there will be, from the point of individualization to the point of returning on that wheel to the monad, different types of positions. And for a long time, the man is simply treading the path of evolution, and not even the path of aspiration, or of probationary discipleship, or of discipleship, or of initiation. So there are positions on that particular wheel, and that's how I interpret an individual's place upon the wheel of life. Another way of interpreting this is whether the wheel is symbolically going clockwise for the average individual or personality, or counterclockwise for the individual who is beginning to respond to the soul and the subtle spiritual energies. So anyway, horoscopes will be arranged differently according to the individual's place or degree of evolution. It will require the work and the thought of the intuitive astrologer. The new astrology is an intuitive astrology, although well based upon foundational facts. It will require the work and the thought of the intuitive astrologer, dependent upon soul contact and much meditation, maybe even 5 hours of meditation upon a client, just as you are to meditate for 5 hours upon one for whom you are going to discuss and express healing energies, to determine the processes of astrological interpretation for those who are active and living souls at some one or other of the final stages upon the path. Well, you know, from the time we have what may be called the first initiation, we are really in the final stages of the millions-year-long path of human development. So we are to learn to become intuitive astrologers. We are to meditate upon our clients, not just toss off one chart after another, but pause, perhaps with a photograph or whatever you may know about the client you are to meet, whether you are meeting that client in person or over the computer in some way. So much meditation required. In order to know what method of astrological interpretation we are going to use when people are coming alive as souls, we really interpret the house positions differently. We interpret the sign influence differently. We interpret aspects differently. We have a whole new set of rulers, of which Orthodox astrology knows very little, maybe finding out a little now. We have two sets of such rulers, and these rulers will relate to the way the individual responds to the sign of the zodiac, whether as an average individual or whether higher potentials within his nature will be stimulated by these energies. The casting of the horoscope of the average or undeveloped man presents no such difficulties. Well, you know, sometimes I think it presents difficulties to a person who is steeped in esoteric astrology, because the approach to interpretation is to draw out the soul potentials, and such an astrologer can miss the fact that the average person is simply interested in personality issues and can make the mistake of attempting to apply spiritual interpretations to someone who is not interested in such things or responding to such energies. It might be added, in addition, that the signs of the zodiac, okay, let's look at this, we seem to be having the same problem here. It might be added that in addition, that the signs of the zodiac are concerned primarily with the life expression of the heavenly man as far as our planet is concerned, and therefore with the destiny and life of the planetary logos. Well, okay. The Tibetan says different things in different places. He's giving the zodiac here a very elevated influence, so that it affects the planetary logos particularly. As a matter of fact, I think that could certainly be said of the constellations of the zodiac, whether the signs of the zodiac should be brought into the same category. Okay, that's possible, but they are definitely methods of adapting the energy of the zodiacal constellations of stars to the use of the planet and of the beings upon the planet, such as man. Anyway, there are methods as well in which certain planetary deities within our solar system affect the destiny and life of our planetary logos, who is a non-sacred planetary logos. Anyway, he's trying to draw a distinction here between the signs of the zodiac and the planetary lives. Now, we have to be careful, because the word signs doesn't always necessarily mean signs, nor does constellations also necessarily mean constellations. There are different ways of using these words. So we could be talking about the stellar influences even when the word signs is used. We will have to study the context to see if this is the case. So we're talking about the signs of the zodiac and their effect upon the planetary logoi, the heavenly men. They are also concerned with the great man of the heavens, the solar logos. Well, in this case, we certainly are not talking about those fields of energy surrounding our planet that we call signs. We are definitely at this point talking about the constellational logoi, the lords of the various zodiacal and other constellations. I did mention earlier in this series that the solar logos himself might have fields of energy, 12 fields of energy surrounding the sun, which would act in a similar way to those fields of energy surrounding the earth. And those fields of energy we tend to call the signs, as they are methods of receiving, adapting, and expressing constellational energy for the particular being involved. So anyway, the signs of the zodiac have a high influence upon planetary and solar logoi. I refer in this last instance to their effect as it makes itself felt in the solar system as a whole. And with this effect, there are few astrologers at this time fit to deal, I suppose, in the department of astrology in hierarchy. Then they will be fit to deal with them. All right. Certainly, we cannot understand the effect of the various zodiacal constellations on the planet Saturn, on the planet Jupiter, the planet Venus. We don't really know their zodiac or when it begins or at what stage of the zodiac they are passing through at the moment. For instance, our planetary logos is passing through a period when the constellation Aquarius is about to become extremely powerful in the developmental life of our planetary logos. But this is not necessarily the case for many other planets who may be entering into different ages altogether. And our solar logos as a whole thus affecting all planetary logoi, may be in a certain zodiacal stage. He may be in the age of Scorpio or Taurus or Leo or some other one of the zodiacal constellations, thus affecting the whole solar system. So indeed, we are not fit to deal with such possibilities, or at least to ascertain their true nature, except we can speculate. I would remind you that the lives who inform these great constellations, well, there it is. There are lives. There are planetary, there are zodiacal lords. There are lords of the constellations, okay? Some people think that the constellations are just aggregations of stars and are not necessarily informed by some great life the way our solar logos is informed by a great life, or a planetary logos. No, the constellations are informed by far greater lives than inform any one normal star. Perhaps there are abnormal, immense stars like Antares, incredibly vast, the lord of which is a stupendous life, equal to that of a constellational lord of a smaller constellation. But these are speculative matters. I would remind you that to the lives who inform these great constellations, and whose radiation, dynamic and magnetic, first ray and second ray, in a sense, outgoing and ingathering, reaches our Earth, this effect is incidental and unnoticed. Well, okay, how much do we notice our effect upon one of ourselves? Do we notice our effect upon a cell in our body? Or upon an atom, for that matter? We do not. I suppose it is capable, a great life is capable of zeroing in on one tiny unit. After all, the planetary logos does seem to come in touch with an initiate at a certain degree. An initiate is a tiny unit, but normally this effect is unnoticed by the greater life. The primary effect that the lords of these great constellations have, you can see he is talking about lords of constellations and not just about signs, which are more like energy, Davic energy fields. Okay, the primary effect that they have is upon our planetary logos, and this effect reaches us through him. Okay, we do not invoke or importune or somehow seek to reach the constellations per se. There is a chain of command. It involves the planetary, the solar logos, and certain other planetary logo, and finally our planetary logos, and these great energies reach us through him, pouring through that great planetary center to which we have given the name Shambhala. Now, this is very important. The energies of constellational logoi reach us through the solar logos, and ultimately through Shambhala. And it is there that they are gathered together for specific use under what we have called the law of assembly, which D.K. deals with in some of his other books, I think, maybe perhaps in Dyna 2. So we, in a way, these great lives are touching us, but there is a whole transformational chain in which the energies are stepped down until they can finally be used by lives such as we are. It is, this type of energy, it is therefore capable of evoking the major response from the monads. Okay, so the zodiacal constellations, the zodiacal constellations affect primarily the monads, which are cells in the planetary logoi, rather than human beings. Okay, the primary, the major response. Now, you know, we all undergo zodiacal responses, no question about it. But the major response is felt on the monadic level, and what that response may be, we will only know when we can again focus totally aware monads. And these monads express themselves through the kingdom of souls and through the human kingdom. Okay, so there's your chain of command from the monads to the souls to the human being. From monads to souls to the human beings. It consequently, let's see, how does this go? And the monads express themselves through the kingdom of souls through the and the human kingdom. It consequently expresses itself through the hierarchy, we might say the hierarchy of souls, and through humanity as a whole. So in a way, the constellations, constellations of the zodiac express through great wholes, such as the hierarchy of souls and such as humanity consisting of the many personalities. We are to think of them in terms of wholes. This is a point of real importance and should be noted and connected with all the teaching you have had upon this most interesting theme of the three major planetary centers. And by that we mean Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity. And the and what we're saying here is that the signs of the zodiac as constellations affect these three. Okay, it is the work of the zodiacal influences to evoke the emergence of the will aspect of the heavenly man and of all monads. This is a higher type of purpose than we usually think of when we're thinking of the effect of the zodiacal signs or constellations on our life, our personal life. So the will aspect all the way through, the will aspect of all monads, souls, and personalities, okay, who constitute the planetary body of expression. So let's make that connection of the zodiac of constellations with the will. We'll put it in capital letters there, just so it is prominent. Now, is he saying, therefore, that the dragons of wisdom, the planetary lords, have the purpose not so much of evoking the will, but more of evoking love, wisdom in some way? Is he saying that? Well, perhaps it is so. This statement, he goes on, means but little to you today, but it will mean much to those students who, in a few decades, what is a few, will study what I am here saying. Well, here we are, certainly a few decades later, maybe seven or eight decades later. How much does it mean to us? We must think of the zodiac of constellations in terms of the process of evoking the will, primarily of the monad, but also of the soul, and also of the personality. And that means that this first aspect of divinity, which we are now in process of developing, is definitely fed by or stimulated by the zodiac of constellations. Let's get that in our mind firmly so we can think of the real purpose of this type of zodiacal energy in the life not only of the human being, yes, but in the life of the planet. Well, think of it. What, you know, these are constellational logoi, greater by far than solar logoi, who are immense as far as the human being is concerned. So this idea that the lords of the constellations evoke the will in planetary logoi and in man is makes sense. It is reasonable. Properly understood, it accounts for much that is happening in the world at this time. I think what he's talking about here are the constellational lords of Leo, Pisces, and Capricorn, who certainly at the time that this was written had an immense effect upon the human family as a whole and still continues to do so. So we are connecting the zodiacal energies with the will. We are connecting the zodiacal energies with great wholes. Now, later, in a treatise on white magic, well, it actually was written earlier, he does discuss the manner in which the signs of the zodiac are related to the lower nature of man. But then is he talking about the signs of the zodiac and not so much about the energy of the constellational lords? There's a great Jacob's ladder of entities with which we are concerned, and we cannot possibly see all the way up this ladder. We're just beginning to understand the rungs that are a little bit below humanity and a few of the rungs that are a little bit above. And really, our vision does not extend very far, except perhaps speculatively. As these influences pour through our planet and thence to the centers of force upon our planet, they produce a dual effect. Well, the centers of force can be considered as kingdoms or as certain cities, let us say. There are different ways of looking at the planetary centers, and I suppose they can also be considered as chain lords and globe lords. Okay, they produce a dual effect. So let's see what he has in mind. They produce an effect upon advanced man. Okay, now he's referring to man. Also, there are more centers in the planet than man is. Man is just a very minute center, but now he's come right back to man, which is, after all, our greatest interest, the proper study of mankind is man, we have been told. Okay. They produce an effect upon advanced man, galvanizing the centers above the diaphragm into activity, enabling him to respond to the radiation and the activity of the hierarchy. So this is, again, related to what we were discussing. The advanced man receives incoming energies and does not pass them on and through to the lower centers as the unadvanced man does. They are trapped in a way in the higher centers, which are great magnets for these energies, and the lower centers have been subdued. So that is what happens with these constellational energies, no matter how they may be mediated for the advanced man. And they produce an effect upon unevolved man, enabling him to function as an ordinary unenlightened human being. So there these energies are passed right through. They are received by the higher chakras, but as they are not very developed, not very magnetic, yet they are passed right through to the chakras, which are powerfully developed, and there they express themselves. It should be noted here, the Tibetan continues, however, that all the energies, zodiacal, systematic, and planetary, have a definite effect upon all the lives, in all forms, in all kingdoms of nature. Okay, well, the Tibetan is stratifying the major impacts of these energies, but he's saying they are, after all, pervasive, and there's not a single life in any form in all the kingdoms of nature which are not affected by them. So we have a pyramid, in a way, where the greater effect is on the higher aspects of the pyramid, but an effect does trickle through and affect the lower aspects, maybe every atom in nature. Nothing can escape these radiatory and magnetic influences. The goal of evolution for humanity is to become consciously and livingly aware of the nature of these energies and begin to know them and to use them. Well, he really is talking about the importance of astrology and astronomy to humanity. So let's call this the importance of astrology to humanity. And there's something amazing about astrology. Just everybody's interested in it on some level, whether they want to dismiss it, whether they want to believe in a childish presentation of it, or whether they really study it. There's something captivating about these particular energies, and we do want to come on rapport with them. So we who study esoteric astrology and who pass it on to human beings who may not know much or anything about it are actually performing a service, because it is the conscious goal of humanity to become aware of them, and livingly aware. What does that mean? I guess that means that we can begin to respond in a vital way to the energies that we recognize. It doesn't just remain theoretical. It impacts our emotional body. It even more importantly, it impacts our etheric body, and we can feel the presence and the transmission of these energies. Some Gemini effect is going on here. My image wants to turn into two images. I can't stop that from happening. But when I do notice that, I try to return to my unitary self, if it does exist. Okay, this is the field of occultism, as the hierarchy has always told men. And what does that mean? You know, occultists try to be aware of subtle energies. Occultists become aware of subtle energies and use them in service. This is what the true spiritual occultist does. So we're entering a fifth ray age, in a way. Aquarius does express the fifth ray. It is a ray which passes through that constellation, or is transmitted by that constellation, and we are really going to become aware of the names and effects of particular energies and their interactions during this also seventh ray age of Aquarius. It might be stated, the Tibetan goes on, that the disciple has to become consciously aware of the planetary influences and to use them for the carrying out of soul purpose. Now, this is the very first thing that has to happen. Consciously aware of the planetary influences and begin to use them for the carrying out of soul purpose. Okay, our first approach then is to the planets and how these planets, representing different functions in our nature, different psychological dynamics and principles in our nature, can be used for carrying forth the soul purpose of which we are becoming increasingly aware through meditation, study, and service. The initiate has to be aware of the zodiacal influences which emanate from outside the solar system altogether. Now, we're not talking about just the effect of the signs. We're talking about how the signs receive and adapt the energies of the great constellational lords and make those energies available to human beings. So let's get that firmly in our mind. Disciples approach the planets and how these planets may help with the carrying out of soul purpose. The initiates, while not ignoring the planets, as we will see that there are many initiatic functions of the various planetary logoi, so we don't ignore them, but the initiate has to become aware of the zodiacal influences which, as far as we are concerned, ultimately emanate from the constellational lords. And no wonder it has been possible for certain astrological researchers to definitely statistically prove the effect of the planets in the life of a human being, while not so able to prove statistically the effect of the zodiacal constellations. Perhaps if the sample being used were a sample of initiates, if such a sample could be large enough, the effect of the zodiacal constellations through the signs could be statistically proven. So anyway, planets and signs. Now let's see where we are here. Okay, we have a little more time. These can be recognized as, okay, so we're talking about planetary influences, we are talking about zodiacal influences. Zodiacal influences operating on everybody and everything, but especially important for initiates, and planetary influences especially important for disciples. Okay. So these energies can be recognized in the following way. If I could just... my computer wants to do strange things. A vibration registered in one or other of the seven centers. Now, if we were to turn to Esoteric Astrology, page 517, we would see that the Tibetan is going to give us the ways in which the planets are connected with the different chakras. There we see, you know, Pluto head center going all the way down to the base of the spine. And here, for disciples and initiates, we see the various sacred planets connected with the various chakras. Okay. But now, DK is talking about something which he does not, as far as I know, clearly tabulate at any point. The effect of zodiacal constellations on the various centers. Now, we know that every sign of the zodiac, or constellation of the zodiac, rules a different bodily part, and therefore we can associate these parts of the body with various chakras. That we can do. But there are other ways of considering the relation of zodiacal constellations to the chakras. For instance, let's say that the first ray is particularly connected with the head center. Well, let's look at the first ray constellations, Aries, Leo, and Capricorn, and find the ways in which they are associated with the crown chakra and with the head in general, and these ways can be found. When we think about the heart center, we normally think about the second ray. Well, let's look at the ways that Gemini, Virgo, and Pisces can be connected to the heart center, and we'll do the same with the throat center in terms of Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn, and so forth, going all the way down the normal sevenfold chakric system. I have said, and I do believe it is correct, that Okay, there's the electricity falling out. Okay. That every sign of the zodiac, every planet can be related to every chakra. And I do believe there are ways of relating every sign of the zodiac to every one of the centers as well. I think this would be important because there are many, many thousands of years when people are simply focusing through their solar plexus center or one of the lower chakras. And therefore, the many different signs in which, under which they are born have to have an effect upon the major chakras through which they are expressing. But archetypally, according to the ray they express and a few other associations, there will be certain signs of the zodiac which are more prominent in relation to certain chakras than others. So anyway, these influences can be registered as a vibration. They can be registered as the revelation of a particular type of light conveying a specific color to the initiate. Well, okay, this gets into the details. DK did give to one of his groups a kind of color formulation. Whether that formulation was specifically from him or whether he adapted it from another source, I don't know, but here's how it goes. Aries, carmine red. Taurus, deep blue. Gemini, yellow. Cancer, violet. Leo, orange. Virgo, yellow again. Libra, indigo. That's an unusual one. Scorpio, crimson. Sagittarius, rich blue. Capricorn, green. Aquarius, turquoise. And Pisces, lavender. Okay, now he also gives us on page 329 and 330 of Esoteric Astrology the seven types of the 12 types of light, one from each of the signs of the zodiac. So here is Aries, the light of life itself. Taurus, the penetrating light of the path. Gemini, the light of interplay. Cancer, the light within the form. Leo, the light of the soul. Virgo, the blended dual light. Libra, the light that moves to rest. Scorpio, the light of day. Sagittarius, a beam of directed focus light. Capricorn, the light of initiation. Aquarius, the light that shines on earth across the sea. And Pisces, the light of the world. So we're talking about how we can experience these vibrations when they touch our energy system. And of course, now one will be tempted to relate the particular type of light that we have just discussed to the particular color for each sign of the zodiac. And perhaps, you know, like the light of life, carmine, red. Or the light of interplay for Gemini, yellow, or the light within the form, violet, and so forth. I think through those associations we could learn a great deal. These constellational influences and planetary influences will also be sounding in our consciousness as a peculiar note. Now, H.P. Blavatsky gave the notes, certain notes. She gave Mars to red, the Sun to orange, Mars to red in the note C, the Sun to orange in the note D, Mercury to yellow, and the note E. She gave Saturn to green and the note F. She gave Jupiter to blue and the note G. She gave Venus to A and the note indigo. She gave the Moon, which is, we can consider it veiling Uranus, to the color violet and the note B. So the notes which are related to the particular planets are perhaps more solidly discussed and less ambiguous in their assignments. As for the notes for each sign of the zodiac, there's different ways of doing this. You can do this via the chromatic scale, and there are, 12 half steps in the normal octave. And you could say, well, Aries is C, and Taurus is C sharp, and Gemini is D, and Cancer is D sharp or E flat, and so forth. That's one way of doing it, but maybe not the best way. There's another way that you can proceed around the circle of fifths. G is five notes from C. So maybe if you began at Aries and C, you'd go five notes, and you'd find the note G, which we would relate then perhaps to Taurus, and then we'd go up five more notes, and we'd find the note D, and we'd relate that to Gemini. That's one way of doing it, but these correspondences have not been confirmed. And as you study them, there are many ways in which some of the findings are contraindicated in other ways. So I would not settle upon any way yet of knowing what is the peculiar note of a zodiacal constellation or sign. It's a most intriguing study in the law of correspondences, and I think that when the fourth ray, the fifth ray, and the seventh ray get together, then we're going to be able to get to the truth of this matter. I've written a paper on some of these things, but I still consider the matter inconclusive. I do believe that Aries relates to the note C and to the color red, but it's more difficult when it comes to assigning the other signs of the zodiac. Now here, the influences of the constellations and the planets also can appear as a directional sound. That's a tantalizing idea, because it's a sound that is pointing in a peculiar direction which should be followed, presumably to get the most out of the vibration. It has something to do with the will, and will with direction and with the path. A sound which, if followed, leads you in a certain direction upon a certain path. We'll have to leave this for occult inquiry later on, but hold the idea of what might be the nature of a directional sound. In other words, it's not simply a sound, it evokes the will to follow, the will to pursue where that sound will lead. We oftentimes hear stories of following the light, okay, even if the light leads you into a swamp like the will-o'-the-wisp does. But there may also be ways of following a sound or having the sound point to a certain dimension, in a certain direction, which can be entered if the sound is followed. Okay, well, just a little more then. The whole story of the zodiac. The whole story of the zodiac can be picturesquely yet accurately summed up in the following statement. There are three books which the three types of human beings study and from which they learn. The Book of Life is studied by initiates and refers to the 12 constellations of stars ruled by 12 lords of these 12 constellations. This is the Book of Life. Obviously, it's relating to the first ray, and we saw that the primary effect of the constellations was upon the planetary logoi themselves, and the primary effect in man was upon his monadic aspect, though all other aspects were touched. Then there is the Book of Wisdom, which applies to disciples, and the 12 planets are involved. And if we use such a term as wisdom, we must include the higher influences of the planets and their esoteric and hierarchical rulerships. And let's just say that life is related to Atma and the monad, that wisdom is related to buddhi and the unfoldment of pure reason. And apparently the planets can tell us something about that, and the planets can help us open up the wisdom potentials of the egoic lotus. Then there is the book of form, or of manifestation. This refers to humanity as a whole, not to those who are yet aspiring, and the 12 creative hierarchies which are responsible for building the vehicles of humanity are the types of lives involved or revealed in this particular book. So this is related to the vehicles. And here the Book of Wisdom is related to soul and to buddhi, and the Book of Life is related to spirit, monad, atma, yes, and to atma. Okay, well, we'll come back to this, and we have not time now for this summation. But we are into a very interesting area of the preliminaries. We've studied now a few more pages. And as we go, it will be easier to move along, hopefully a little more rapidly, because many of the foundations will have been presented already. So, as we have been doing in this series of esoteric astrology adventures, we will always end with the great invocation, our most effective instrument in promoting the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ. Excuse my voice, it's a little bit rough right now. This is the third adventure today. You have to make hay while the sun shines. So it's a rainy day, it's perfect. Okay. Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, thank you, everyone. So this is the conclusion of our work with the Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 10. And 21st of June at about 8:30 p.m. And we will see you again. I'll get this sent out as rapidly as I can. Hopefully it will be useful for your studies, especially enlarging the sense of connections and links between the different factors and the different dimensions, undertaken hopefully under the influence of some measure of pure reason, and hopefully able to induce in us, the listener, some appreciation for inclusive reason and pure reason. So, farewell for now. We'll see you later.